Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, one story really dominated everything. It was President Trump and his fight against these four congresswomen of color. His tweet towards the beginning of the week saying that they should go back where they came from. His rally where people in the crowd were chanting, "Send her back," talking about Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. So on our show this week, we talked to Harvey Levin from TMZ about the president's strategy. And he says that the president actually knows what he's doing. Essentially, the president is trying to make these four women the face of the Democratic Party and scare moderates and not have somebody like Joe Biden be the face of the Democratic Party. Then we have a very special debate between Tommy Lahren and Lisa Bloom, two women with very different perspectives, talking about this issue, talking about California politics. And this week, I got a chance to talk to Joe Biden a little bit out on the campaign trail. We're going to have that as well. But we begin all this with Harvey Levin from TMZ. Harvey, good to see you.
Hey, Alex, good seeing you.
So one of the big stories this week is this fight between President Trump and these Democratic congresswomen, which to me really feels almost like a reality show scene from the reality show President. Do you think that the president sees things through that lens in terms of creating drama, creating good TV? Is that important to him?
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you look at his campaign, it was just riddled with that. But, you know, since he took office, and, you know, a lot of people thought he would do a turn and, you know, kind of shed all of that. And instead, he doubled down on it because it worked for him and he got elected. Look, here's the way I see this. He's got a base, and that base is probably 40-ish percent. 40% doesn't get him elected. He's going to need to get about 8-9%, something like that, additional. And so he's got to start courting people who are not necessarily in that base. He knows what he's doing, and he knows that people are going to react to it. They know what I think he knows what they're going to say about him, and I think he wants it. I mean, I don't think Donald Trump is outraged that people are saying, "You're a racist for what you said in these tweets." I think he knew it when he wrote it. He had to. And I think he's calculating that the way the discussion is going to go is going to make the people who are against him look so, you know, seem so angry, which they are, you know, justifiably, you know, that maybe he can corral that additional 8%. That's the only thing I can think of. But I do think it's calculated.
Well, and he's flat out said that he's trying to essentially make people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar the face of the Democratic Party because he would rather run against people like that.
He knows what he's doing here. I don't think the Democrats respond with one voice. And I think that's what Donald Trump is banking on, that if Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's voice is as loud or louder than Nancy Pelosi's, then he is going to say she is the face of the Democratic Party, she has embraced socialism, and then he's going to try to court that 8 or 9% and scare them and try to get them in the fold. That's the way I see it. I don't know how you see it.
And you see something similar on the presidential campaign as well. You got somebody like Joe Biden who has a very old school approach to the media and sort of press releases and formal interviews. And then you've got other candidates, Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, others that are really trying to use social media in a different way to get a message out as well. And you see some of that divide. Where do you see that situation?
Well, I really haven't talked about this on television, but I will. You know, I look at it a little bit differently because I look at people like Pete Buttigieg, and you look at, you know, some of the other candidates, Tim Ryan and others, who we've had on TMZ Live, and I think what they've realized is that when you go on cable news and think that that's the place to keep going, at a point you are preaching to the choir because every cable news station is, you know, has an agenda, has a point of view, and they either hate Trump or love Trump. And so if you go on these shows, they know the audience is either going to like him or not like him, you know, depending on the show you go on, but it's not going to get new voters. It's not going to attract new voters. It's not going to attract younger people. And you know, and I will say that Pete Buttigieg may be down in the polls, but when you look at Iowa and you look at New Hampshire, he's not that far down. And I really believe he is somebody to watch here because he is using the media, as far as I'm concerned, better than anybody and has figured it out better than anybody, than any of the candidates. And I would not discount him at all in this race because of that.
And this week, Pete Buttigieg announced that he had higher fundraising numbers than any other Democratic candidate by a long shot, and that more Californians gave money to Pete Buttigieg than gave to Kamala Harris.
Than Kamala Harris, I know. And you saw what happened in one debate with, you know, Kamala Harris, that she spiked because of one debate. I think that all of this talk about polls and polling and all this other stuff is irrelevant. That the big thing that's going to happen, as far as I'm concerned, is Iowa and New Hampshire. Because whoever does really well there, everybody in the media is going to say, oh my God, they're the front runner now.
And I've talked to people that are running Pete Buttigieg's campaign who say essentially it's Iowa or bust for them, and that it's all about Iowa, and they see things the same way that you just said. So on the celebrity issue, though, because that's something that you guys cover so much. We saw Kim Kardashian recently going out and getting involved in the Susanna issue, and we've seen talk to her about criminal justice reform. We've seen celebrities get engaged in a way that they haven't before. For as well. Where do they fit in all of this? And do you think that their advocacy is effective?
I don't think their advocacy is nearly as effective as some do. I mean, you look at Stacey Abrams, you know, she had Oprah Winfrey, she had so many people, and she lost. You know, I don't think, you know, especially outside of the coasts, that I don't think people like being told who to vote for. Their effectiveness is in fundraising, but in terms of endorsements, you know, I've kind of, you know, been in this rodeo for long enough and seen, you know, politicians get endorsements from celebrities, and sometimes it not only doesn't help, there's a backlash.
And lastly, just to wrap up with what you were saying earlier, do you think that Mayor Pete is the strongest candidate for the Democrats?
you know, I think he's got something that none of the others have. And part of that is, and Alex, I know you've met him, there's this authenticity to him where he's kind of unvarnished when it comes to politics, that there are so many politicians who, when they're in politics long enough, you know, especially on a national scene, you can feel them choosing their words, and it doesn't feel like it's coming from here. It's coming more from, you know, it feels a little calculated. I don't think he has that, and I think that's a huge asset. Now, let's get real for a second. Is this country going to vote for an openly gay candidate? You know, I'm gay, and, you know, so, you know, I would hope that a lot of people would be open enough that if he's well qualified, great. But I think there's still a lot of homophobia in this country. And I think Donald Trump will play on that. And I don't know that he'll play on it directly, but he'll play on it somehow, and maybe others will as well. I don't know. I mean, you know, we elected a black president, and there were a lot of people who said that wouldn't happen. But I, you know, I don't know how that's going to play, to be really honest with you. I just don't know. I hope that it doesn't matter. And I think it would sure be interesting to road test it and see. And beyond that, I don't know what else to say.
And as Pete Buttigieg said to me, there's only one way to find out. You know, so there you go.
You road test it. Yep. You find out.
Harvey Levin, thank you so much for your insight. Very, very interesting conversation. Really appreciate it.
Always good talking to you, Alex.
Our thanks to Harvey Levin. Now to our debate this week between Lisa Bloom and Tommy Lahren. Tommy Lahren from Fox Nation. She's got a new book out called Never Play Dead, all about overcoming adversity and sort of her life story. Lisa Bloom, of course, one of the best-known progressive attorneys in the country and the daughter of one of our favorites, Gloria Allred. And we start by talking about those tweets. Ladies, welcome back to The Issue. It's good
Thank
to have
you.
Both of you here. So let's start this conversation with, were the tweets themselves talking about going back to your country, especially many congresswomen who are from America, is that in itself racist?
I didn't take it that way. I understand where some people found it to be insensitive, crude, aggressive. I can understand that. To go as far as to say it was racist, I don't believe it was. When I saw the tweets, when I read the tweets, very much my takeaway was love it or leave it. And that is something that I've said before. That's something that President Trump has said before. It's if you don't like this country, if you want to fundamentally change it, you want to bring socialism to our shores, then you should leave because you're clearly not a fan of the American process.
Well, of course, love it or leave it is offensive in and of itself. Conservatives complain about a lot of things about America. We don't suggest that they should leave. Dissent is patriotic. We all want to make the country a better place. And one way to do that is by dissenting. But look, clearly it is racist. I'm a person who's been debating hot button issues and taking provocative positions publicly for 40 years. Nobody in all of that time has ever suggested to me that I should go back to where my ancestors came from, which, by the way, is England and Poland. And one of them was an illegal immigrant many generations ago. This is something that's only said to people of color. And by the way, Ayanna Pressley, African-American congresswoman born in Ohio, where is she supposed to go back to exactly? You know, most African-Americans in this country, their ancestors were brought here in chains. And for hundreds of years, when people had a complaint, they would say, go back to Africa. It is insulting. It should be relegated to the dustbins of history. It makes me so angry that our president would say this, and now his supporters are chanting it at a rally.
First of all, I want to speak to that. I don't agree with chanting it at the rally. I'm actually going to be doing final thoughts on Fox Nation about that today.
Good.
I don't think that that's helpful.
Good.
I think that that is misinterpreting what Trump meant by his original tweet. So I agree with you on that point. However, I disagree with you when you say no one's ever told you to go back where you came from. Almost on a daily basis, people tell me, well, your ancestors took over this nation and drove out the Native Americans. Go back to where you came from. So I have heard that almost
I've
on a daily basis.
But,
well, you should check out my Twitter notifications.
But to the basic point, though, I mean, President Trump complained about this country all the time. His entire 2016 run was complaining about this country. He talked about American carnage. He talked about disgusting. He mocked the president. Nobody said to him, leave the country. Isn't that part of the process?
No, and I agree with you on that. I don't think we should tell people to just leave the country. I do believe, though, when what he was referring to is if you want to bring socialism to this country, if you want to ravage this country, if you believe in open borders and a free-for-all, then maybe you don't like the values of this country, because that is not what our country is based on, is socialism, on things like the Green New Deal and the extremism that's coming from the left. So I agree, there's nothing wrong with saying that there are problems in this country. We all think there are problems in this country. But when you want to fundamentally change this country the way those four do, that's what he's taking issue with. That's what I take issue with.
He ran on a campaign of radical change. He wanted to shake things up.
Radical change, like Americans come first.
He wanted to shake things up in Washington. He wanted to do everything differently. And that's what he has done. And to say that these people want open borders is ridiculous. None of them favor open borders. To say that health care for everybody is socialism, I mean, is public education for everybody socialism? People used to say that. Is providing fire coverage by firefighters to everybody? Is that socialism? I mean, there's certain basic things that we're fighting for. It's not socialism. And anyway, they shouldn't have to go back if they're advocating, you know, public policies.
When you say that they don't believe in open borders, when they're talking about decriminalizing illegal entry, sorry, that is open borders.
No, it's not.
And when you say providing health care for all is this wonderful thing, especially illegal immigrants, have you seen the homeless epidemic we have in this state?
Yes, I have.
And we should be spending $100 million a year on health care for illegal immigrants. People have
What's
no legal
What's the alternative?
Right?
Let people be sick and die? Let me respond to your questions, because we are one of the wealthiest countries in the world. And to say that we're not going to provide health care for all of our people, even people who are destitute, who are God's children, who may be homeless because of mental health issues, we shouldn't give them health care? That is un-American.
Let's also get to a point of this that you said. You said you don't agree with the chance of send her back. The president also said that he didn't agree with the chance, but he said that the day after. And then I talked with Joe Biden about that this week during his trip to California. Here's what both of them said.
I was not happy with it. I disagree with it. But again, I didn't say that. They did.
You can imagine if someone said that when I was speaking, what I would have said. No, stop. Speak up, man. Not after the fact. Not after the fact. And look,
you think he's trying to have it both ways?
Pardon me?
You think he's trying to have it both ways, to have that in the moment and then the next day walk it back?
Well, he does that all the time and everything.
Heal this country, because clearly, if that
that is happening, we're pretty divided right now. If you were president, how do you put the pieces back together?
I think the vast majority of the American people understand what's going on. They get it.
Do you think he's trying to have it both ways?
No, I don't. And I believe the president when he said I disagreed with it. And I think in that moment, he didn't know what to say. Please stop chanting. And maybe he should have. And in fact, I wish he would have, because I don't believe that that's what Trump supporters really believe in. And also, the chant that I prefer to hear is build that wall anyway.
Last thoughts on
this? You know, he is the president. To say that he can't show leadership is too much to ask of him when he's standing there for 10 seconds silently while they're just following up on what he had tweeted. It's absurd. Are our standards for our president so low that we can't even hold him to account when people are saying, send her back? I mean, please, I think we can insist on better.
Here are the latest numbers for the second quarter. Mayor Pete at 3.8 million, Harris at 3.3 million, Joe Biden at 2.4 million. By the way, all three of them hosting fundraisers in California this week. They'll all be back on a stage for the next Democratic debate. It's in Detroit on CNN. It's going to be two nights, and now we know who will be on stage with whom. On night one, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren will share a stage. That's on Tuesday, July 30th. Mayor Pete is also going to be on that night. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, they'll be back together for a rematch on stage on Wednesday, July 31st. Back with our panel now, Lisa Bloom, Tommy Lahren. Lisa, where do you see the state of the race right now?
I love Kamala Harris. I thought she killed it in the debate. I was very impressed with her. I've gone to some of her fundraisers, and, you know, she's not taking PAC money, and Mayor Pete is. I like Mayor Pete very much, but taking PAC money, I think that's kind of old school, and most of the Democratic candidates are not doing that anymore.
Political Action Committee translation. Yes, where do you see the state of the race?
I'm excited for the next debate. I think that the reason that Kamala did so well after the first debate is because people didn't actually watch the debate. They watched clips of the debate, and they watched clips of the debate wherein Kamala went after Joe Biden, and, you know, she hit some punches there, and they were good. And so people were watching clips of that, so they were very excited about Kamala, but they were watching a 30-second soundbite. They didn't watch the entirety of the debate.
Although it did have record ratings, 18 million people tuned in for the debate, the highest-rated Democratic debate ever, so at least some people tuning in, but a lot more people saw the clips. And as you were mentioning, in this viral world, that probably does change the way you go after somebody. Confrontation really rewarded right now,
and
so we'll see.
I think what Democrats want to see is who has what it takes to beat Trump. And it really didn't matter what she said. What she showed was that she's tough. She's a fierce debater. She doesn't back down. She'll stand up to anybody. She'll stand up to her own party. And I think showing that she would stand up to Trump.
Let's talk about California for a moment. A couple other issues this week. Real quick takes. There's apparently a rat explosion. This is happening. City Hall, downtown Los Angeles, other parts of the state. There was a study that came out that showed rat population way up, being blamed for some of the typhus outbreaks, some of these medieval diseases that are coming back. Some activists say part of the problem is that policymakers are not allowing for different types of ways to kill rats because they're worried about the environmental impact of that with other animals. Tommy, where do you see this? Is this sort of a bigger symbol for what's happening in this state?
An infestation in California, absolutely. I don't know, again, I don't know the exact causes of this rat infestation, but I would probably say that the homeless encampment issue and the feces on the streets, that probably doesn't help much when you're trying to deter rats. So when you have your streets and your highways and your interstates being filled with those wonderful encampments, that certainly doesn't help the problem.
I mean, where do you see this? Because they do say that the homelessness is to blame for this, and some are saying maybe this is another example of liberal policies not working.
Well, shame on us for having over 50,000 homeless people in Los Angeles. That is to our shame. It is horrendous. It is horrendous mostly for the people who are homeless, but also for the businesses and for everybody else. We passed a bond measure of over $1 billion to build the housing. The problem is nobody wants it in their backyard, right? The NIMBYs. And so it has to be, I suppose, forced into different areas, different parts of the city. We also have to have denser population allowed in different parts of the city so that we can build apartments. People don't want that, but we've got to address this issue.
And lastly, another issue came out of Berkeley this week, and this is a question of potentially too much political correctness. They've said that they're not going to have manholes anymore. They're going to be calling them maintenance holes. They're getting rid of pronouns when it comes to referencing anything. So no more fraternities or sororities. It's the collegiate Greek system residents. Pregnant women will not be called pregnant women. It's just going to be pregnant employees. I know this is sort of your brand.
Well, you know,
is this just a softball?
I think we agree that there are a lot of issues, not only in this country, but especially in California. So the fact that we're worried about word policing instead of actual policing of our borders, of our cities, and we're worried about offending somebody by the name manhole, I think that that's... pretty indicative of where we're at in the state of California.
Well, I think we can do multiple things at once. This cost $600 to change, so it was very small. And I think language...
You can give that to a homeless person.
And I think language matters. We don't say newsman, we say newscaster. We don't say fireman, we say firefighter. You know, one of the arguments against Sandra Day O'Connor going on the Supreme Court in 1981 was, well, we can't have a woman because it's Mr. Justice. So we've changed language over the years to be more inclusive, and I don't see anything wrong with it. We should continue to do that.
The only one that sort of surprised me is the pregnant... Well, because I don't know how you have be a pregnant man.
Because you could be transgender and you can still get pregnant.
But then
and
you'd
people
be a pregnant,
get to be identified by the gender that they...
But then you'd be a pregnant woman, right?
Not necessarily. You could be a transgender man and you could still get pregnant and give birth.
Only in California will we be discussing this, by the way.
No, that's
only
not
in
true.
California.
There's transgender people all over the country. And I'm so glad that they're finally getting some of the respect that they deserve.
And as we end things with our panel, we want to talk about the issue of adversity, because Tommy's got a new book out called Never Play Dead. And both of our panelists have dealt with a lot of haters over the years. Here's what they had to say about that.
I'd love to read one quote from it that I think sort of talks about this concept, right? It says, here it is, put up on the screen. I've been fired, sued, dropped, disinvited, heckled, laughed at, slandered, betrayed, and dumped. But that didn't break me. So I want to talk to both of you about sort of how do you deal with the haters. Let's start with you, Lisa.
Well, listen, I, as a human being, it does hurt sometimes. I'm going to be very honest. I like to project this tough exterior. I'm a trial lawyer. But I'm a human being, and it can be very hard. But we have to remind ourselves that literally everybody in the public eye has haters. I tell my clients when we're getting ready to sue, you know, Bill Cosby or Donald Trump, that you're going to get haters. Mother Teresa had haters. Mm. And you have to dig down to the tough part of yourself. You also have to surround yourself with people who do like you and support you and are cheering for you.
God, how bad a person do you have to be a Mother Teresa hater?
Right?
Well, I mean, can you imagine at the age of Twitter back in those times? Yeah. But, you know, and I agree with you on this. And for me, it's something I also write about in the book. This book isn't just for conservatives. I have a lot of liberal female friends as well, and we support each other, and we like each other. You and I can talk, and we can like each other. We can talk about things that are not political, and we can respect the other position, the other point of view. And I think we've gotten to a point in this country where the litmus test for friendship has been, who have you voted for? And if you voted the wrong way, then they don't want anything to do with you. And we need to get away from that. We can be friends, we can respect each other. And at the end of the day, my notifications on Twitter don't define me, and they never will.
Right.
Well, Tommy has some great stories in this book. It's not really a politics book. It's more about what we're talking about, overcoming adversity. We're going to talk about that in a special podcast, which you can stream right now with Tommy. Just search for The Issue Is. In fact, all of our past content available in podcast form wherever you search, including conversation with Ann Coulter, Kim Kardashian, Mayor Pete, Gavin Newsom, Ben Lyons, Areva Martin, and Lisa Bloom. And by the way, before we go... congratulations to you, Tommy, on getting engaged.
Thank you.
So
we've
got
a
picture of that that we want to show of you and Brandon and a very nice ring there.
Thank you.
He's like the envy of every conservative guy out there.
Well, I appreciate that.
And our thanks to Lisa Bloom, to Tommy Lahren, and to Harvey Levin. And Tommy was our guest for a special expanded Issue Is podcast extra, where we talk about her life. We talk about growing up in South Dakota, what made her a conservative, how she got her first news job at 21 years old. She ends up on the air, her fights with Glenn Beck, her respect for some of the ladies of The View, her job at Fox Nation, just getting engaged, why this guy was the one. She tells a lot of stories. It's really interesting. We hope you listen to that podcast as well. We hope you subscribe to our podcast, to rate us, to tell your friends about us. We love hearing from you as well. Connect with me. I'm at Alex Michelson in social media, at ElexMichaelson. Thanks again for listening to The Issue Is. Next week, we'll talk about the Robert Mueller testimony. We're also going to have with us John Cox, the former Republican governor candidate in California. Stephanie Miller is going to be with us as well. Plus, Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg both will be appearing in California next week. See you next week for The Issue Is.